to the Parent Show on Radio Verulam 92.6 FM.
Neave Solicitors are proud to sponsor the Parent Show. The friendly team at Neave's includes specialists who can guide you through all the legal ups and downs of family life. Visit neavesolicitors.co.uk. Neave Solicitors, your complete legal solution.
And welcome to the Parents Show on Radio Verulam 92.6. I'm Cathy Weston.
And I'm Shirley Heyman.
Welcome. Tonight we are talking about the subject of speech and language problems in children. Over 1 million children in the UK currently have communication difficulties. So that's the focus of the show tonight. We're going to be joined by a speech therapist, Sarah Moore, who is also a local parent. Sarah is an experienced speech and language therapist. She originally specialised in cleft palate. She's now very experienced in helping children on the autistic spectrum, as well as all types of delays and disorders. She has four children herself, goodness me, what an achievement, and lives just outside Harpenden. So she's a local speech and language therapist here for us tonight to answer all your questions. And I know that you've been submitting them all week. We've got them all lined up and ready to go. Just before we start the programme, Shirley, we came across a lovely video this week, didn't we?
Yeah, quite moving, Cathy, isn't it?
Quite moving. It is for visual purposes, but we thought we'd play it on the radio tonight. It's a video from the organisation ICANN, which is a charity that focuses on communication problems in children, supporting parents. And the ICANN video is really trying to convey what it's like for a child living with communication difficulty. So we thought we'd play a little bit of that video, and hopefully you'll get the gist and it'll introduce the subject.
Okay. Stay at school.
Hey, name, you're what? What's your name, hey? Hey, what's your name?
Andrew.
Stupid, you something called what? What, you stupid or something?
No.
Loser, loser, loser.
She was two when I said, this time next year, we won't be able to keep her quiet.
Mummy, why do I talk topsy-turvy?
At school, she regressed so much she wouldn't even communicate.
Come on, Kate, have you got the answer to that?
She would barely make eye contact.
Kate, you should know this one.
My little girl had gone.
Going here on what?
Stupid he is.
What's going on here?
He's stupid.
Stop, everyone. Okay, Andrew needs just time, bit more thinking to process information. Okay, everyone stop. Andrew just needs a bit more thinking time to process information.
The invisibility of communication needs leaves you feeling so isolated. Several health professionals had wrongly assumed she was autistic because the impact of speech and language difficulties can be easily mislabeled. So we were overjoyed when we came across ICANN. The relief of being in an environment where everything was very visual.
What's the answer to the first question?
Useless.
Quiet. Take some thinking time. Andrew.
Photosynthesis.
That's right. Well done.
Can he play football, sir?
Why don't you ask him?
Can you play football?
Can you sing, kids?
One in 10 children have speech, language and communication needs. ICANN is the children's communication charity. We make sure that no child who struggles to communicate is left out or left behind.
Brilliant. So that is, it's such a moving video when you actually see it, isn't it, Shirley?
It is, yeah.
It's from the ICANN charity. They are icann.org.uk. So do have a little look at them. We'll refer back to the resources they have available on this issue a little bit later in the show. Now, we are joined in the studio, like I just said, by Sarah Moore. a speech and language therapist, and she's going to be talking us through this issue. Goodness me, it's a huge issue, isn't it, Sarah? There's such a spectrum of speech and language disorders out there. Can you just convey to us what the general types are?
Right, well, it is a very wide area. In general terms, there are problems with speech sounds, so a child might have difficulty with articulation and they can't actually make the sounds, and others have problems actually putting the right sound in the right place at the right time. And then you have the language problems where they aren't processing language and they're not understanding what's said to them. Or they may have difficulties actually making sentences and putting words together. Then you have problems like stammering or disfluency, as it's sometimes called. You have voice problems, and all these can have major impacts on the child's life. Speech and language problems can be part of other conditions like autism, and they are very wide.
Now, it was interesting in that video because it did refer to the sort of casual labelling of any child who's not talking so much, perhaps as autistic. It's really an easy label for the general public to sort of, oh, it must be autistic, he must be autistic. Or, you know, there are so many variations, aren't there, in these disorders? So
there's
a normal level of speech issues, aren't there, in children growing up from a young age?
Yes, and that's why it's really important to have skilled professionals who are actually looking at your child, and they are able to tell you where the problem is and the cause of it, and then obviously provide the right intervention.
Yeah, so from whatever's happening with your child, it's always worth getting a professional opinion just on what it may be.
Oh, definitely. Mm. I think it really helps to put parents' minds at rest if there isn't a problem. Sometimes children are a bit slow in their development of language, but they're heading along the right way. And others are disordered. So you really need to know what's going on so that you can plan ahead for your child's education and their development generally.
And Shirley, can I ask you, I know that you were obviously a nursery practitioner for many, many years. Is this an issue that parents generally worry about, or is it something they don't worry about so much?
No, I think actually, Kathy, it's an issue that parents worry about a lot, especially with the first child. You know, and then when they've got one, two, three children, they start maybe feeling a bit more relaxed about it. But certainly that's how I actually came to get to know Sarah, because I called her in to come and work in the nursery because I had so many parents worrying and saying exactly what you're saying, Kathy. I think my child's autistic.
And
I'm a sort of jack of all trades, but Sarah obviously is a specialist. And that was, I don't know, probably a decade ago now, and we're still carrying on with that practice.
And some of the issues that you just mentioned, would they be the most common ones in your practice? The stammering, the disfluency?
Yes, that's not very common for me. I might have some children who have normal disfluency. All children go through a stage where they are disfluent. They might repeat consonants. So you might get a child saying mamma, mamma, mamma. My daughter certainly did that. And it can be quite distressing for the parents, and they wonder, oh my goodness, is my child going to stammer? But actually, it's a very normal developmental process. And it often comes back again when the child's language develops further, when they're about 4.5. So you might get it starting at 2.5 and then coming back again at 4.5, 5 as their language becomes more complicated. They've got more choices to make. And so it's lovely to say to parents, I think it's a very normal process. You don't have to worry, and just take the pressure off them so that they can enjoy that stage of their child's development like all the other stages and not be concerned.
And Sarah, before we come on to the big list of parent questions we have here, can you just describe what happens when a parent brings a child along to you in a session? People are probably thinking, well, what happens in that when I bring him along? What you said that you would intervene or you would have an assessment. What does that feel like for the child?
Well, in my independent practice, I quite often see the child in their own home. And that means that they are very comfortable, and I'm able to play with them with toys and very informally get an idea of what the problem is. I do a lot of talking to the parents while the child's playing so that they get used to me being there. And then I will ask questions about development, general development, and then what the issues are that the parents can see and hear. I also check, has the child had hearing issues? Are there things that need to be investigated further? And then I will sometimes do a formal assessment if the child is up to that stage where I can check where they are as regard to their age, so that we can come out with an age-related score at the end. Other times you can't do that in the first session, especially with children who are on the autistic spectrum. So you do a lot of informal assessment, and you see the child over a number of sessions to get a picture. Mm-hmm. But all the time you're working with the parents, and they're very much partners in the whole process. And then you can sit down and say, well, I think we can help your child in this way, and I'm going to do some sessions of therapy with your child. And then the parent will take exercises from what I do with the child and do that with their child during the week. And then I'll go back another time and see them again.
Lovely. Thanks. That's very helpful, I think.
I mean, one way, actually, Sarah, as well, it's worth saying that we've developed over the years is that the children carry on their speech and language therapy in the nursery,
yes,
don't they?
Yes,
so once
definitely.
They're settled and happy in nursery, it doesn't mean working parents have got to keep coming out of work to sit for 20 minutes, half an hour with Sarah and their child, you know, once a week. So they just pop out from nursery. They know the place. They, you know, they know the room. They know the they know Sarah. And it just feels just part of their routine. So we've found that that's a practice that helps the children a lot.
OK, so parents don't need to be worried. It's just something, speech and language therapy or the assessment, the initial assessment, is something that can be embedded into play, embedded into a home visit, mm-hmm. and something you can do in partnership with your child's setting.
I hope so. I hope people could do that, yeah.
OK, great.
And actually, if you see Sarah arrive, she has boxes full of toys. you know, it's quite exciting.
She's very popular.
Yeah,
in
she
any
is
nursery.
Very popular, yes. So anyway, Sarah, we wanted to thank you for coming in, you know, giving up your time and your expertise for local parents. And we have got two or three sheets of questions for you.
Mm-hmm.
So we know you've had a quick look at them. Nothing too scary, hopefully. So if we just have a chat through, and, you know, I just wanted to say to the parents at home, there's going to be so much information on the Parents Show website after. So if anything, you know, catches your imagination or you need some more information, please do check it. So let's have a look then. We've got one question here about a five-year-old boy and not being able to say his R or his R properly and them coming out sounding like a W. So, you know, mum's saying she wasn't too worried at first. She thought school would sort it out, but it didn't. Sarah, what do you think? Oh, a three-year-old sister as well with much clearer speech, you know, at the same stage. So what any thoughts?
Well, R or R is one of the last sounds to develop in speech development, and that's usually occurring by the age of 6 to 7. So I would say to that parent, don't worry too much at this stage. And certainly if the child's at school and is beginning to learn to read, that child can look at the letters and learn that R and W are very different, and that may well help him. If it becomes a problem later on and he can't actually make the sound, then I think that's the time to seek help. But he's still got a little bit of time at the moment to sort that out.
Okay, so five, we're not too worried about that, you're saying. So, I mean, going on from that then, when do you think children are sort of roughly supposed to pronounce all of the sounds?
Well, usually by the age of 6 to 7, they have got the adult sound system.
OK, so probably a bit later than some parents think.
Yes, different sounds develop at different times. So, for example, by age 2, you would expect a child to have the sounds P, B, T, D, N and M. If they haven't got any of those sounds by age 2, then you would be concerned.
Mm.
By 3, you should be looking at sounds like S for sock, F for fish, V and Z and W. So, again, I think I would be concerned if at 3 they weren't producing, especially S and F, for fish, so that you could get some help then. And by 3.5, K and G, and then the other sounds like St, Sm, Sn, and Sp, so sound blends should be coming by age 4. The other sounds like Ch, J and Sh are usually by 4 to 4.5, and then, as I said before, TH and R usually by age 6 to 7.
Wow, thank you. I mean, I'm not sure which book you could find that in, Kathy, that succinctly.
And so I'm trying to write it all down as she's talking. And one of the things that just popped into my head is when your child mispronounces one of those sounds, as they all do every day,
yes,
what is the correct thing for a parent to do in that moment? You know, we go, no, it's th or whatever it is, or yes, f. can you just help us with that little intervention?
Yes, I think you should make it very positive, and I think you should say, if a child is saying something like "doc" for sock, he might say "do," and you say, "Yes, it's a sock." So you say it very clearly, and you're not saying "no, it's not." You're saying "yes, it's a," and then whatever it is, very clearly, so they're hearing a very good model of the word.
Isn't this great? That's such a fantastic piece of advice. Thank you. My child will no longer be suffering under my corrections.
Right. Well, we better carry on because we've got quite a lot of questions from the parents. Sarah, we've got another question here about a little chap called Lucas who has Asperger's. And sadly, parents saying that Lucas has shut down, refusing to answer questions from the teachers at school sometimes, they just cannot get him to communicate. He doesn't actually have speaking difficulties. They know that he's listening, but he's just going off into his own world, sometimes not even nodding or shaking. Any tactics you could suggest for mum in this case?
Right. Well, for those of you listening who don't know, Asperger's is part of the autistic spectrum disorders. So this little boy, it sounds like he is struggling with some form of anxiety. We know that children do stop talking if they're very anxious, and he may be presenting as an elective mute. So he's choosing not to talk in those situations. So my advice would be that you actually find out when this is happening. Is it always when he's with a certain person, or is it a certain situation or routine that's different? And really explore all those areas. And then you may need to seek some help from a professional, either a speech and language therapist who specialises in elective mutism, or go back to the people who gave your son the diagnosis and ask them if there's anyone in their team who can help, like a psychologist. But I would, in the first instance, really look carefully at what's going on, because he must be very anxious and he may not be able to exactly express why he is anxious at that time.
Thank you for that, Sarah. We hope that that's useful for Lucas, his mummy. Okay, well, switching a little bit now, we've got a question from a mum who says, is there any magic way to encourage children with a second language at home to talk in this language? So I guess we're looking at maybe mum and dad, or having, you know, two different mother tongues, and not just the English, you know, when they're living in England, and that it's probably the language they're hearing around them the most. I've got some thoughts about this too, working with children like this. But what do you have any particular thoughts as a speech and language therapist?
Well, I would say just make it as much fun as possible. We know from research that children learn language very easily. As young children, they can learn foreign languages very easily. And I think that possibly the children are perhaps not choosing to speak at home because they don't see it as very interesting or fun, and it's something mum and dad really want them to do. So I was thinking along the lines of maybe having an evening where they have food from their culture and invite some friends round who speak the language, and just make it fun, make it interesting for them. There's no reason why they can't learn to talk the language. They're just choosing not to, and they probably understand far more than they are saying. So I would say make it fun. What do you think, Shirley?
Yeah, I certainly agree with you. And I was going to say take the pressure off. Don't ask them to perform for relatives or friends. And I've got lots of, you know, quite a few bilingual children I'm working with at the moment. Things like, I say to their families, you know, read to them in that other language at bedtime rather than English. Get some DVDs from that country. Put posters and signs around your house that are in the, you know, the language you want them to sort of use a little bit more. And obviously, you know, one great way is having songs on a CD as you're travelling along in the car. So you don't even say that it's the different language. They'll just learn the words without even realising that they're singing in Spanish. Okay. Oh, there's so many questions. It's kind of, where do we go next? What about the question we have in from a parent who has a seven-year-old, where the child has a lisp? Find that word quite hard to say. Lisp. Myself. And she says, you know, it seems endearing, but people keep saying, you know, oh, he's going to need braces. You need to get it sorted. Any thoughts on that, Sarah? Is that your sort of ballpark there? You know, do you have any ideas on lisps?
Yes, well, most children have lisps at some point when they lose their front teeth. usually they're caused by an anterior open bite, which actually means your teeth can't come together at the front of your mouth. And that can be caused by dummies, it can be caused by thumbs, and it could be caused just by your genetics, how you are made. But I would suggest that you speak to your dentist and get some advice about what he or she plans to do about your child's teeth. And then you can see if that child can make the sound by putting his teeth together, or whether he's just learnt to put his tongue between his teeth instead of behind his teeth.
So it's kind of separating out the dentistry problem from a genuine speech issue.
Because if he can't actually make the sound because the tongue's poking through a gap in his teeth, then that needs to be addressed first. But if it's just a habit he's learnt, then that can be dealt with through therapy, or even through looking in a mirror with your child, telling them to put their teeth together
and
see if they can do it. Again, make it fun, take the pressure off. But if they can't do it, it's worth seeking some advice from a professional.
Great, thank you.
I mean, can we just pick up on that thought you said, Sarah, about dummies? Because I know that's something parents seem to get worried about, especially new mums. Do you think there's any problems with babies having dummies? And, you know, do they need to be out by two? Is it true the dicky birds need to take the dummies away when the child's two?
But equally, Shirley, people worry a lot about thumb sucking.
Yes, they do, don't they?
Yeah.
It's an issue which is quite controversial, actually. And some speech and language therapists would say definitely no dummy ever.
Right.
And others would say it doesn't make any difference. And I think it very much depends on how much they're used and what your child's like. Some children walk around with a dummy in their mouth talking all the time. And that can cause problems. I've seen children whose speech sounds are pushed to the back of their mouths because they have had this dummy at the front and they can't lift their tongue up at the front. But that's an extreme case. I think that's where you keep the dummying all the time. If it's just used for pacifying the child, getting them to sleep, then I think we have to really work with the family and say, look, you know, I know what it's like to have a baby who doesn't sleep or whatever. So I think you have to really go with what the mother feels happy to do at that stage and not force them to just throw the dummy away, because that could cause more problems in the short term.
Yeah. I certainly agree with you on that one. But anyway, right, next question. Quite a big question, but what are the main factors? There's so much, Sarah, we know, but what's the main factor, really? A couple of things that positively influence speech development in our children.
I think the main thing would be to spend one-to-one time with your child every day. I think when they are little, they really, really need you to spend time reading stories, talking about what they're doing, pointing out everything around them, not to the point that they can't get a word in edgeways, but it's really important that you commentate on everything they're doing and that you just spend that time with them, really. Eye contact, and playing lots of games with them and playing with toys like teddies and dolls, and that what we call symbolic play develops from that, which is a precursor to learning language. And it's really, really important that parents do have that time, because if they don't spend the time with the child, then you can have problems.
I think maybe a year ago, we had Suzanne Zedek on the Parents Show, who did the original Graco research, you know, with the pram company.
Yes.
The one that said mums and dads, you know, put the pram in facing you, talk to your baby all the time, because it was the most beneficial thing you could do.
Yes.
Is that familiar
to
you?
Yes, I have heard of that, and I totally agree. I think it's really important. I think in an age where we have people texting all the time and looking at their phones and talking on their phones, I think you do see some parents who don't actually spend time telling their children what's going on around them. And I think it can be a problem. And I think as long as you make time in the day to sit down with your child or talk to them as you're going along, do lots of nursery rhymes, and just generally chat away, it should be fine.
Okay.
I mean, the other thing, Sarah, I don't know what you think about this, but when we're training nursery teachers, is we talk about turn-taking in speech as well. So we say, give the child time to speak and stop and listen. So it's not, I absolutely agree with you, putting a narrative to the action, but still, you know, sometimes they need a bit longer, don't they, some children, to process.
Yes.
So just waiting, maintaining eye contact and seeing what the child comes out with.
Yeah. I agree with that. And also not asking them lots of questions. Mm. If you say to them, what's this, what's that, they're not going to respond. In fact, they'll clam up. But if you can give them some forced alternatives, like, is it a biscuit or a a car, that kind of thing. They're going to have to be forced to say one or the other. And that can be a technique that helps children. And like you say, giving them time to talk, not just jumping in and talking for them.
And certainly, you know, over the years, I've seen that a lot where parents want to desperately tell you what their children are saying. And sometimes I want to say, just hold back a bit, you know, just be quiet, let the child say it. Turn taking is, I think, quite important there.
Yeah.
Okay, next question we've got tonight then is a mum saying, hello, I've got a 6-year-old daughter. Her speech was delayed somewhat and she is now less articulate than her sisters. When she was little, she fell out of her high chair on holiday and bumped her head, and I'm worrying that this injury has had an effect. Do you think that this is possible?
Oh, dear. Parental guilt tied into... I think we can all think of situations with our children. We think, oh, was that my fault because I drank something, a glass of wine when I was pregnant, or he fell out of it? Not that I did, everyone. But, you know, you can sort of relate to what the mum's asking.
Yes, you certainly can. I'm not a neurologist, so I don't think I can really answer this question in terms of saying that yes or no. But I would say this, that I think you would have noticed more problems than just being less articulate than her sisters. If this had been a problem, I think she probably would have had right or left-sided weakness and you would have been rushing her off somewhere. So I just want to reassure you in that way. But I think the key thing is that she's less articulate than her sisters. And if you're concerned, I think you should go and get her assessed by a speech and language therapist. It may be that her sisters are in a different place in terms of language skills, and it may be that she is a little bit slower along those lines. But if you're concerned, the main thing is to get your mind put at rest by getting her
Good advice.
Help.
Okay.
So we've got a slightly more specialist question here, Sarah. Somebody saying that their son's had a diagnosis of apraxia. Mum's very worried, scared. What's the future going to hold for this chap? Anything you could sort of help with there, please?
Well, first of all, I want to clear up a confusion that might be occurring, and that's the terminology. Apraxia of speech is the American term. Over in the UK, we say developmental verbal dyspraxia. So there might be some confusion with that. And basically, dyspraxia is where, in the absence of neurological problems, so nerves are absolutely fine, but the child has problems with coordinating lips and tongue muscles to make the sounds in the right place at the right time. You can have this problem along with physical dyspraxia as well, where the child is generally clumsy, or it can just be a specific problem with speech. I can understand this lady's concern because it is quite a severe speech and language problem, and I presume she is already having speech and language therapy to have got the diagnosis. So basically, I want to reassure her that she is obviously having the right treatment, but I think she should ask her therapist more questions about it to find out what the plan is with the therapy, and also just go to the support websites as well. There's a Dyspraxia Foundation actually in Hitchin, which is fairly local, and there are others on our website that you can look at today, and she can get some help from people who have gone through this problem, but it is a long-term difficulty and he will need lots of help.
But Sarah, is there a possibility then that he will be able to talk, you know, the mum says, perfectly well at some stage then in the future?
Well, it's very difficult to say that without seeing the child. Some children have some aspects of dyspraxia within a speech and language problem, and they make good progress. And others who are very severely affected do tend to progress, but very, very slowly. And even as adults, you might be able to notice that they have some problems. They often sound a bit like they're foreigners, and sometimes when they're tired, their speech can really go quite badly disordered.
One last question for Sarah, Shirley.
One last question. Mum says, hello, is there any evidence that by taking my 9-month to sign language class is going to help him to become a good communicator later on in life?
We parents want guarantees, Sarah.
As far as I can tell, there's no evidence out there that says that signing does help your child to produce good communication skills or have good communication skills. But certainly, I think anything that helps your child learn to communicate is positive. So a total communication approach where you're using sign language, and we all use signs, we all use natural gesture, like cupping our hand for drink, brushing our hair, cleaning our teeth with our fingers. We all can do that naturally, but alongside speech to our child as well is really important. And I know there has been a big debate about this, certainly amongst speech and language therapists, as to whether signing is necessary in children that develop speech and language normally. Certainly for many, many years, children have learnt to talk without signing classes. But as far as I'm concerned, anything I think that encourages good communication can benefit your child.
Okay, well, we're hoping in a few minutes to speak to a lady who actually runs Sign Along. Is that correct, Shirley?
Yep, Sign Along trainer she is.
Brilliant. So she's a parent trainer in classes around sign language. Is that right?
Yeah, it's a new sort of signing system, she told me.
92.6 FM.
And hopefully now we've got Pam joining us. Pam, hi, are you there?
Hi, yes, I'm here.
Thank you so much for joining us tonight. And we spoke earlier just sort of finding out a little bit about what you do. I don't know if you've had a chance. Were you listening to what Sarah was saying then?
I was listening to a bit of it, yes.
Yeah, so tell us what you're up to these days then for this sign-along training that you do, please.
Yes, I'm an independent registered sign-along tutor. And for anyone who doesn't know what Sign Along is, it's a sign-supported communication system.
Right.
So it's based on British Sign Language.
Yeah.
But it's geared more towards children and adults who have communication disorders and learning difficulties rather than the deaf population.
Okay. So, and you're training parents, aren't you, to do this?
Yes, I do. I train parents. I'm a parent myself. I have a 14-year-old son who is on the autistic spectrum and was nonverbal until the age of 7. And so I got into Sign Along to communicate with him and became a tutor and now teach other parents as well.
Okay, and weren't you saying that your daughter, can she use Sign Along as well?
She does. She very early learned that all children can really benefit from Sign Along. It just adds another level to communication, and a lot of children are visual learners. My daughter has no additional needs, but she was in mainstream school, with a child who had Down syndrome, and she wanted to be able to communicate with that little girl. So I ended up teaching her, as well as all of her classmates, to sign as well, so that they could all communicate with the little girl that needed Sign Along, but it just kind of caught on at the school and the whole school ended up doing it.
All right. Oh, okay. Thank you. And so what ages then can the children be to do this? Is it literally from babies?
They tend to start using it in nursery schools, but it's becoming more and more popular to do sort of the baby sign classes. And you can do that from Sign Along. Sign Along is a really easy, clear system to use. And so you can start introducing it, at birth with, very basic vocabulary to help make sense of some of the words that we're saying. So, any age.
Thank you. And, I mean, where did Sign Along come from? Because, it's something sort of fairly new. I hadn't really heard about it until I was looking at it the last couple of days.
Yeah. Jill and Mike Kennard are the founders of Sign Along, and they're based down in Kent. And I think they realized the need for there to be a signing system that was geared more towards people with communication difficulties rather than the deaf population. And they worked with special schools down in the Kent area to help develop the system. And it's based on Well, if you think about the fact that, you know, research says that as little as 10% of all communication takes place verbally. So you think about that other 90%, what makes it up? And it's, you know, body language, natural gestures, facial expression, that kind of thing. And Jill and Mike realized that if they combined all of that with signs and simple spoken language, it would help make communication a lot easier for people. And that's how it all started.
Okay, Pam. And is this, because I know you're not actually in Hertfordshire, can people find out about Sign Along? I mean, obviously we're going to put your website address onto our website tonight, but are there tutors all around
Southeast? There are tutors all over the country. A lot of speech and language therapists are trained tutors as well. If you go on the website and go under their services, there's a list of trainers for the whole country. And you can find one in your area and contact them.
Okay, thank you. And I just wanted to pick up on, it's so interesting, you know, and I don't know whether all parents will know that, you know, 90% of communication is actually nonverbal.
Yeah.
And so, you know, this natural gesturing is really, really key, isn't it?
Wouldn't you say
for all children?
Yeah, and it's something that anyone can do, even if, you know, you haven't had sign along training. When you're talking to your children, your toddlers, using your hands, your facial expression, and really, you know, giving as much information with your body as you do your mouth, it really does help children to understand a lot better.
Okay. Well, thank you, Pam. You know, we're pushing. We've got so much to do tonight, but thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure.
And, yeah, hope to speak to you again.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye.
The Community's Voice. We're Radio Verulam.
Hi. So we're back talking about speech and language difficulties. We've got Sarah here, who's been talking all evening, giving her advice, responding to various listener queries. Can we just clarify the options that are available to parents, Sarah? We know that there's an NHS, like with so many things, an NHS option and a private option for parents.
Yes.
So if they're listening tonight, they think, oh, I really do want my child to see a speech therapist and have an idea of what's going on. What are those routes like that are available to them?
Right. Well, if they have concerns, they can talk to their health visitor or their GP, or they can go directly to their local clinic and make a referral, put their child's name down and find out what the waiting list is there at the clinic. Or they can find an independent therapist, a speech and language therapist, and they can do that by going on a website called www.helpwithtalking.com and find a therapist themselves. So they do have options.
Okay, so and if they go down the private route, many of them will be thinking, how much does it cost per session? How many sessions would a child need?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's difficult to say because each independent therapist has their own costings. But if you can certainly find out from that website what is a reasonable amount. And occasionally people can claim on their health insurance, their private health insurance. But they need to obviously to look into that as
okay.
well.
And is there any guidance that you could give on choosing a therapist? Do you just do it according to specialty, age group?
Yes, that's one way you can do it, but mainly it's word of mouth, I think, because if a therapist has worked with a friend of yours child and they've been happy, certainly that's how I get most of my referrals, by word of mouth. So it's worth just finding out if anyone you know has used a speech and language therapist and then contacting that person. I think you should make sure that they are child friendly.
Yep.
And they're certainly going
got
to
lots
use
of you- toys.
Yes, lots of toys, lots and lots of toys, and that you feel comfortable with them. And I think there should always be an option to discuss how many sessions you're prepared to have before you reassess where
Lovely.
You're going.
Okay. Well, we're joined on the phone, I'm hoping, by Catherine, who's a local mum who's been listening to the show tonight. Hi, Catherine.
Hi there, Cathy.
How are you?
Yeah, good, thank you.
Catherine, we know that you've recently had been dealing with this particular issue with your child, speech and language issues. Can you just tell us, in listening to the show tonight, what you may have picked up that was useful and what your reflections might be?
Yeah, I kind of wish I'd listened to this about a year ago, because it would have actually made a lot clearer the things that I've now been through with him. So my son is now 4.5. I have to say he's at the kind of the easy end of the spectrum of the problems that, you know, you've been hearing about with the questions tonight. So his difficulty basically sounds like he's got a cold. So the S, F, those kind of sounds, which you were saying were age appropriate around three, they're the ones that it kind of feels like he missed. So if he's saying van, he says van. If he tries to make a, you know, you say what noise does a snake make, he pushes the sound through his nose, not through his mouth.
Right. Sarah can't wait to butt in here, Catherine. I'm just going to sit back and let her chat to you.
Yes, so he's had speech and language therapy, has he?
Yeah, so we started when he was about 3.5, and it just wasn't working. He was not interested. He was not playing the game. So we, on the advice of the speech therapist, we stopped and started again when he was 4, by which time, to be fair, he was in nursery, and I think he just got the idea of being taught and the idea of a teacher, and I think that really helped.
Yes, yes, that's great. And does he have a history of hearing problems?
No, he's bunged up, for want of a better word. So he has waxy ears and a snotty nose, and I think that probably is all linked.
Yes.
With the speech therapy, they did make an ear, nose and throat referral at the same time. So we did go see a specialist in Luton just to make sure there was nothing. It wasn't actually a physical problem.
Yes, yes. They would have been looking at whether his soft palate was abnormal, because that's the part of your mouth that controls air coming through your nose or through your mouth. So that was very important. They checked that out, as well as his hearing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I was actually kind of impressed they did that, because they could have said, oh, you know, glue ear, which seems to be the answer for lots of things, I have to say. And you know, he'll get over it. But I actually made the referral, and I think we were there once a month for about 3 or 4 months, just so they could sort of keep an eye on him.
Right. And how's he getting on now? Has he learnt to push the air through his mouth for those sounds?
I have to say, it's a fascinating process. So we're with the NHS, who I have to say have been fantastic.
Brilliant.
We're on our second therapist, but that's because my work day's changed and etc. So we have to change. We're with a fabulous lady called Laura now, and they just click. And I think there is an element of the personalities having to match.
Yes, so I agree.
I really liked the lady we had the first time. I thought she was great, but he just didn't. There was something about her that he just didn't sort of engage with.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas this new lady Laura is brilliant. So he can now say F, and his V sounds are getting much better. And 2 weeks ago, he said for the first time, and seriously, we were jumping up and down.
I know, that's
so
lovely.
Exciting.
Yes, it's quite a transformation, isn't it?
It's amazing. It's just something clicked. He suddenly got it.
Well, well done for you for finding the right help for him, Catherine.
Uh-huh. Thank you.
And thanks for sharing your story.
Yes.
Not at all.
Okay, take care.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye. Bye. Gosh, we've probably got lots of listeners who are probably thinking, oh, there's always something with children in speech and language, isn't there, that a mum's got a little niggle about or worried about, or perhaps, you know, their teachers as well have noticed. It's just, I think what I've learned tonight is that there's a lot to rule out.
Mm-hmm.
And no matter what happens, the treatment, the therapy, the intervention has to be fun and relaxed.
Yes.
Otherwise, you're not really going to get anywhere.
No, you're not. It's very important to have fun.
Now, lots of resources for you to write down or link to tonight. Shirley, we must have about 30 different websites and things that we've listed here. The main ones, I'd say, I hope maybe Sarah would agree, is the ICANN one, icann.org.uk.
Yes.
It offers free confidential help, and you can ring them up, email inquiries at icann.org.uk. They've got loads of resources. Specifically, there is also the Talking Point, which is an organisation supporting children's speech and language development, talkingpoint.org.uk. There's a National Autistic Society, which is autism.org.uk, British Stammering Association, lots and lots of resources. Very briefly, Sarah, what would you say is the most important resource for parents that you can think of? Best website, Communication Trust,
ICANN? Yes, I think ICANN is an excellent website, and very comprehensive, so that's a
Great.
Very good one. Also, Aphasic is very good, and National Autistic Society for Children on the Autistic Spectrum, excellent.
Neve Solicitors are proud to sponsor The Parent Show. The friendly team at Neve's includes specialists who can guide you through all the legal ups and downs of family life. Visit nevesolicitors.co.uk.
Neave Solicitors, your complete legal solution.